Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. I'm your host, Omar Cumberbatch. Today's guest is Johanna Derbalowski. She is the author of The Transformation Promise, and she developed the Quantum Heart Field Experience, an easy-to-learn way to transform life situations by changing yourself. She's a metaphysical teacher and healing coach on the forefront of healing and transformation. In addition to her healing work, she is an ordained minister with International Metaphysical Ministries, spiritual counselor, and life coach. Her desire to serve and understand has led her to study different religions, philosophies, and healing modalities. Johanna, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm honored to be here.
Oh, honored to have you, honored to have you. I'm really, really excited about this show, and I just wanted to give you an opportunity to, you know, introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about your journey and how you became, a lot of what you have indicated in the bio, and also a little bit about your book, The Transformation Promise.
Well, I was kind of born into this. I was born into a family in the healing field and medical field, and my parents introduced me to a lot of healers and shamans from all over the world, and at that point I wasn't really that interested, I have to admit. Not at all, actually. But they all, for some reason, insisted on explaining to me how they work. And I thought, well, I'm never going to be like that, because they all were recluse and living in a monastery or alone on a mountaintop, and I was going to experience the third dimensional world. But it stuck, and no matter what I did, I always ended up coming back to that. So it was either a health problem of myself or a loved one, or so that threw me back into searching it. And everything I studied, there was always at the end a question. It was never, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept searching, and I keep searching, and there's always more. That's why it's never it, because there's always more, and we're all different, and everybody heals on an individual level.
Correct,
so there's
correct.
No mass, this is how you do it.
No, absolutely. And that's important that you say it definitely is an individual kind of roadmap that everyone has to go through their own journey. Now, did anything particular, like, just kind of really propel you to just say, this is it, this is where I'm going, and I'm going to start really, really concentrating on this type of work?
Yeah, well, nothing else worked out. The road I tried to take that was going to be, the job that I was going to do or the profession, it just never worked out. And it didn't work out for the lack of trying. It just didn't work out. And then all of a sudden there would be a workshop or a retreat that, you know, I attended instead of running against closed doors. Hmm. So I think it was just very guided. I was guided not to, you know, pursue my career in the film business, and I was guided not to completely pursue my career as an artist, although I still do that and I love that. But the main focus was always how can I get to the depths of my spirit?
So failure has treated you pretty good. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear, because a lot of people, including myself, have tried many times to run themselves through a wall when, you know, maybe the wall is just telling us to, hey, listen, stop, you know, try something else.
Yeah, and there is, you know, the spiritual path is very different from a career path.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't really have both.
You can have a good
career and your spiritual side, but when it comes down to the spirit, it's a very intense path, and it doesn't allow for too much sidetracking.
It's interesting you say that, because I did, like, you know, after reading your book, one of the things that you mentioned first, you talked about dreams, and, you know, my question was, why don't dreams always work out? And you know, you have a great answer to that, because you really distinguish the difference between, like, our own dreams and society's. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think we're bombarded by society with and the media and, you know, now Facebook and Instagram with what we should be and what we should have. And you know, even in the spiritual realm, we were for a while really bombarded with the law of attraction. And mm-hmm. yes, you can get everything, but it didn't work. Why didn't it work? You know, we can all visualize really well, I'm assuming. And it didn't work for the people that were promoting it. And I don't really understand exactly what the final thing was. So if I visualize living forever, it's not going to happen because the body is going to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not important and it's a temporary structure. So why not, instead of wasting all this time on visualizing something that, in essence, you have to give up. That's really what it is.
Hmm.
So you might as well go for the thing.
No, I'm sorry, I cut you out. I was just saying, so were we visualizing the wrong things or the unattainable things?
No, I mean, you know... No, I think it's okay to visualize, and it's okay to have a dream and a goal and all that, but be aware of what it is that you're wanting.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the ultimate dream and goal is the attainment of the highest possible spiritual being that I can be.
Mm-hmm.
And since that's what we are, I mean, we are a spiritual being, so being in our spirit is something that will remain. But if my dream is a $5 million home, well, first of all, it's not really, it doesn't really go with the concept of oneness, because not everybody can have a $5 million home, because the earth is not big enough for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if it's... there's a physicist that said that if it's not good for everybody, most likely it's not the thing that will bring you enlightenment.
Hmm.
So you have to understand that we're in this together. We are all the same consciousness on some level.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I want something that sets me apart from others, it's ultimately, I can't do that and at the same time have an open heart. So if you just think about, you're looking at the homeless people on the corner being cold right now,
mm-hmm.
and you go home to your big house with empty bedrooms, you can't do that while having an open heart, because you wouldn't be able to stand the pain from that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to close yourself off in order to live like that.
Right.
Now, you know, that's probably not the most advancing thing in terms of our heart energy that we can go in. And
yeah,
when
see, that's,
we die,
that's...
we lose mm-hmm. the house.
Right. But now, that's coming from, like, and I completely agree with you, and I think this is something that a lot of people struggle with as far as, like, really understanding what it is that they want in this world. Is that because you're definitely a more enlightened person? Is that something that, like, you would teach somebody who's less enlightened?
Well, I would teach them to take a look. I mean, take a look at what you're focused on. Are you focused on something that tomorrow is going to be gone,
mm-hmm.
or will be gone eventually, or are you focused on something that is real? And we all know that experience. We know that experience when you help somebody. And, I mean, when you really help somebody, disregard how much you wanted to spend that energy and money on something for yourself. You
mm-hmm.
feel a lot better if you spend it on somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in the giving, it's in the open heart that we advance.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I like to compare it to, if you have a newborn child, especially if you're a mother and the child cries, your heart tells you to pick up the child And then you start reading books and stuff, and they say, oh, no, you should let the child cry, and it has to learn to stand on its own and all that stuff. But in order to endure your child crying while you're sitting in the next room, you have to close your you have to close off your heart, because otherwise you can't stand it. And
right.
This is the same thing in the world. It's the same thing, and you see all these people that are really closed off on the heart level, especially now that, you know, greed kind of rules.
Yeah, definitely greed definitely rules. And it's definitely hard to promote, like, some of these principles in this country and, like you said, with Facebook and Instagram and all this idea of value in things that, you know, you can buy or you can show off. You know, it definitely is hard to get past that in this country especially.
Yeah, and then once you have all that, it's harder to let it go. Then it becomes your whole life. It consumes you, and then all of a sudden, you know, but spirit really overrides all that. So then you have issues. You have health issues. You have this. You have that. They come up, and they say, hey, look, pay attention. What's going on here? Where are you focused?
Right, right.
And all of a sudden you go like, oh, wow, yeah, okay.
Very true, very true. You talk about structure a lot in the book as well. Can you talk about that concept of structure?
Yeah, I mean, if we look at us as just moving particles of energy, you know, then we would be just like the air. You can't see us or anything. So we need the body to be able to experience anything in the third dimension. So that is in itself is a structure, and it functions a certain way, and so is everything else. So is the earth, the moon, the stars, the orbits, and the buildings, the cars. But that's what they are, is temporary structures, and what makes us is the energy that flows through that. So that's the very physical one, and if we look at healing the physical body, we need to get to know our physical structure.
Mm-hmm.
Then I kind of divided it, although, of course, you can't dissect a person like that. And then we have a emotional mental structure, which is our environment, our jobs, our friends, our neighbors, you know, who we want to look at us and our selfies. And so, and we are really entangled in that. It's a web that we are caught in, but we also create that. So I like to use that example that we are both. We are the spider that creates the web because it supplies our food and income, but we are also the fly that is trapped in it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to see how do we manage our environment, and how much are we giving up to be in a certain environment structure.
Right.
And then, you know, the last one for me that I put in there is the spiritual structure, and that's simply your belief system. And that's technically the easiest to change, because to change your belief system, all you have to do is change a thought. But it's the least likely to change, and it's the most rigid one we have, because we hold on to our beliefs, because we feel that that's the answer to everything. And what that does is, if I have a really rigid belief system, then I immediately have judgment, because if I believe something, I know I'm right. And if I'm right, you got to be wrong.
Right, right.
So unless you believe exactly what I believe, which makes you right too, then, you know, now all of a sudden you have separation. You've separated from others that are of the same energy. So it's really important to check your belief system, and it has to be all-inclusive. Everything is okay. Everybody is all right. They're having an experience of life in whatever they're doing. So you grant them that. And who do we know? We don't know who's right and who's wrong. So it's okay if you know what's right for yourself, but that doesn't mean it's what's right for me. It doesn't necessarily be right for you.
Yeah, no, so, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And you do talk about this extensively in your book, and you know, obviously our belief systems cause us problems as well. So, when you're challenging one of these belief systems, why is it so important to look for evidence to the contrary of that belief?
Because then you widen your horizon. Structures, you need to expand. If you want to grow at all, you need to expand. So if you are caught in a really rigid structure, like a rigid belief system, you can't grow, and the universe expands. So mm-hmm. you are more and more trapped. You kind of imprison yourself in a beautiful landscape that where you can explore. And so, you know, in terms of the healing of the physical body, I say if you only believe in Western medicine or only believe in Eastern medicine, you very much limit your options right there.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that you go like, okay, these people are doing it completely different, or they believe in something completely different. How does that work for them, and could that work for me? Or where are they going with that? Or, you know, and sometimes it doesn't work for you, but then instead of saying that they're wrong or that their philosophy or religion is wrong, you could just say, that's not my choice of philosophy, religion, or healthcare, but it's their choice and it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because
and you definitely...
obviously you're different people and they're on a different path.
Yeah, you do get into that with the book too, and I like this this particular phrase that you discuss in the book. It's like when you judge yourself, you become judgmental of others as well. And this just goes along with the separation idea, correct?
Yeah. I mean, judgment is one of our biggest challenge here. Because you always, I mean, if you judge, you're always judging yourself and you're separating yourself from others.
Mm-hmm.
And we are one universe. So that separation is not really possible in the long run.
Now, that is a hard concept for a lot of people to grasp. So, you do talk extensively about, you know, this kind of belief system as well. Do you feel that people should just not believe in anything outside of what they really believe in? Like, can you expand on that a little bit? Because it's very hard. Like, every day nowadays, like, you have an opinion formulated either for you or mostly for you. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think belief systems definitely are like operating systems in the computer, so they're important. But, you know, there's apples and there's PCs and
mm-hmm.
and they have a different place and they do different things. So you pick the belief system that works for you at that time, but you also have to allow yourself to outgrow it and to expand it and to grow
mm-hmm.
up with it. Because to think, I mean, it's so limiting to think that we as these tiny little humans here on Earth know everything. We don't. So if we
mm-hmm.
don't leave that room for expansion, it's very crippling. It's limiting. So when you have a belief system and you operate by it and then you upgrade and you allow
mm-hmm.
other people to do the same in their time. You know, they may not need to upgrade when you need to upgrade.
mm-hmm.
It's having no judgment of others that really makes a big difference.
Yeah, that's definitely very hard for a lot of people, including myself. It's just kind of something that I think we all naturally fall into sometimes, and we have to be very conscious of the fact that we're doing it to kind of eliminate it.
Yeah, it is very hard. It's very hard for me too, but when you start paying attention, on you catch yourself and you go like, okay, this is
mm-hmm.
their path, and it is okay. And you can't really do anything more than try to be the best you can be. And if your focus every day is, let me be the best possible me today, then you naturally will expand. And all of a sudden, you know, kids get this very easy. They play with other kids, even though, you know, they have different families, colors, churches, Mm-hmm. And on the playground, they don't really care that much. And when we grow up, we care all of a sudden. We don't want to be seen with that, or we are against this, and this is horrible, and that is horrible. But there's a larger picture to it. It's all just mm-hmm. experiences, and we need to have different kind of experiences. Mine need to be different from yours, because I have different areas where I want to grow.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
I mean, some people that you think were way, you know, rigid and behind you, all of a sudden open up in these beautiful flowers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So don't judge another person's path, because you don't know why they're on that path, what karma or whatever they might have to work out, or what they want to learn.
Correct, correct. You talk about a tool chest in your book as well. What are the three easy-to-use tools for healing and shifting?
Well, one is, you know, forgiveness and really working on not dragging all your baggage around, and you do that by forgiveness. And I have my easy version of the Ho'oponopono, which is a really great, great thing to study. You forgive everything and everybody, and you see that the people around you are just part of your play. And if they, you know, play roles that are particularly uncomfortable for you, that doesn't make them a bad person. That just makes them the person that really pushes your button and gets you going. So they're very important. So when you, instead of hating all the people that rub you the wrong way, you go to forgive, let go, and heal that, then you become free. The chains drop off that bind you to that experience. And so that's a very important one to go through, and I divided it up. It's forgiving yourself and forgiving others, and also forgiving yourself in different categories when you've just observed something that was definitely wrong and you didn't do anything, you were the bystander. These are all things. If you're still thinking about a situation in any way or form, you haven't forgiven it yet. So that's a really good way to forgive that. So I go a little bit into detail in that. And the other tool is gratitude. Be grateful mm-hmm. for every experience, whatever it is. If you're only grateful for the good things, then you go into the duality. So as light as it is also as dark as it is. So you have mm-hmm. both. But when you start to be grateful for everything, you know, when you start to be grateful even for the things that aren't going your way, you get to the doorway, which is in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also a good way to keep thinking about where you really want to be. Gratitude is a good GPS system. And mm-hmm. then the third tool that I talk about is your creative gene. To go back to your genetics, which is also popular now in science, what is your real genetics? The real genetics is the spirit, is the God seed that we carry inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what connects us to oneness. So when you realize that you are not your body, you're not your problems, you're not your environment, but your genetic right is from the divine oneness, which is, you know, I don't view that as something light in the clouds, but I view that as the actually a very dark creative energy where there's no light yet. It's just pure creative energy. So you're a part of that, and we're all a part of that. And when we start activating that, we can feel the oneness
mm-hmm.
in everything.
No, yeah, those are definitely things that when I read the book, I was really interested in asking you about, and especially the part about, like, people who get on your nerves the most, that they're actually a part of the play. And what was, you know, very, very powerful was that that particular person, that you mentioned that we might create that person to get our attention and to serve a role. And I think that was very, very hard for me to wrap my head around. So did you really, really say that we create these people? And what did you mean by that?
Well, we rewrite the roles for them in our play. So I think I used the Jesus story because most people are familiar with it. You know, if he set up this lifetime and he wanted to show everything that he came to show, and also that, you know, you exist past death and all that. Well, the death had to occur in order for him to show that. And if you sit around with a bunch of friends and you say, okay, let me set up my lifetime. I want to have, you know, I want to get to this point and I want to have the following experiences. And in order to get to this point, I need to be in a really horrible car accident or something like that. Then one of your friends has to be willing to be the driver of that car that hits you, you know, for you to have that experience. So that's not a job that people would say, like, wow, yeah, let me do that for you. It's like, really? You really want me to do that for you? So it's most likely the people that are closest to you that will, that are willing to push you that far. And then they, in return, have their experience. So it's not like they have their own script and their own experience that they need to do. So it all kind of works out for everybody. And some people have to experience some karma so then they can do this for you and release their karma at the same time. You know, who knows what the whole thing behind it is. And it's not important. But for yourself, you need to look at that every experience is a good experience. And you wouldn't have that experience without those beings that are kind enough to help you have them.
So this is something that's, like you said, is reenacted, in other words, in our lifetime. So this is a part of some kind of reincarnation event where it's like you kind of sit down and plan your life before you return to this plane?
Yeah, I think you definitely... well, maybe you don't sit down and plan. That's just like, you know, a way to do it. But there's definitely a script for your life, and in my opinion. But even if it isn't, you know, even if we take all that away and you have these experiences, as long as you hate those people and what they've done to you, you're suffering.
Right.
They're not. They probably don't even remember who you were. But you're suffering and you're having revenge thoughts and you wish they would be miserable and, you know, whatever all that can do. It just takes an enormous amount of your life force away.
Right, right. It's
so
a lot easier to
way,
let go.
Whether you think you set it up as a play, which I think is just a very easy way to go through forgiving that, because then you kind of see the bigger picture. You see what they had to go through and what kind of parents they need to have had in order to be that mean to you. When you take responsibility for all that in your life, all of a sudden you are empowered. And you
sense.
Have the power to forgive and let go and move on.
Absolutely. You know, you do talk about, like, healing the observer. You say, why is claiming something none of our business not an acceptable position?
Because if you see something and you know it's wrong, then you're involved. It's no longer something that happens somewhere else, because the moment, there are things that happen all the time and that you read in the paper and they just go, you don't even realize that you've read that. And then all of a sudden there'll be one story that really grabs you. And then you finish with the newspaper and you put it away, but that will eat on you. Because in your, you know, the Leonard Cohen song, Everybody Knows. That's my favorite. We know what's right. We always know. We know it's wrong that we have so many homeless people. We know, you know, what we're doing is wrong. And I don't think there's anybody on this planet that doesn't know that.
Right.
But we just sort of say, oh, okay, it's not my problem. But the moment I know it, it is my, it becomes my problem, because I need to make that right for me, because otherwise it'll just gnaw away on my life force.
Now, with all this information and all these things, like you said, you read a newspaper, you can read 100 stories in a week about just injustices and homeless situations. Like, how do you balance, like, that negativity and make it maybe part of your business to address? Is there something that you can recommend?
Yeah, you do the best you can. You do the best you can, and you don't worry about what other people do and that should be doing. You know, like this person should be doing that or should be doing that. So you stay away from that. You go look at yourself and say, what can I do? What can I do to make this better?
Okay, that makes sense, because, you know, there's certain things that you're not going to be able to solve an issue in Australia, per se.
No, but if that issue in Australia is about racism, for example, right? Then you look at racism within yourself. When the story grabs you, you need to look inward.
Okay.
So if I look at a story where somebody got so angry they killed somebody else, and that story happens to grab me, I need to look at, when do I get angry? What do I get angry at? How can I heal my anger? So it's all about yourself. So you use all that to be the best you can be.
Okay. Makes sense. I'm glad you explained that to us. The 4-step process, was that your creation?
No, that's Ho'oponopono. It's a Hawaiian healing modality. It's an ancient Hawaiian healing modality. It's actually more steps, but I, you know, I need to narrow things down for myself and make them simpler. So what I offered is the simple version, but I also, you know, encourage people to actually look up Ho'oponopono and really spend some time with it, because it's beautiful way of forgiving and moving on.
So tell us about your recreation of it and your 4 steps.
Well, the first one is you take responsibility for the play and everybody in it. So you see that the partner that left you or was mean to you, you see how you wrote them into your script, and where do you need to go, and what did they have to do to be that mean to you? How did they grow up? And so you become more compassionate towards the other person by doing that, by looking at the story as that you wrote their script to be who they are. That moment you take responsibility for everything that's happening in your life. And then the next step is that you apologize to them, that you wrote such a shitty part for them.
Yeah.
And when you realize that you're responsible for them being who they are, which is this unkind person, then you apologize for having made them this unkind being, so that you can get your point. And then you are grateful that they did that, and that they did it better than any theater play. I mean, you know, our lives are, the drama is much better than any movie we could ever watch. It brings us
That's
to tears, makes us sick. I mean, it's we're writing good plays here.
That's for sure.
So you're grateful to your actors, and then you say, I love you, and you let them go. So it's the taking responsibility, the apology, the gratitude, and then the I love you, and it's done.
Got it.
And by
so
doing
those,
that, you heal yourself and you heal them. Because you release them from that. So you're not just releasing yourself, but you also release them. They no longer have to be bound by that.
No, definitely interesting. I wanted to throw one of the quotes that you had, too, and I thought this was really, really a nice one. You said, if we imagine the universe as one body, this would be akin to our hand saying our foot is wrong because it looks different. And I really think it's very relevant in today's world. You know, that was a really deep quote. You want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I got this actually from talking to little kids, that concept. The universe is the body of God. I mean, the manifestation of, you know, this universal God energy. So it's all one body, and we are the cells in it. And if we decide that we don't like the organism we're in and we don't like the cells and we go into the judgment and we say all you other cells are wrong, it's kind of like creating cancer. You know, we have hands, we have feet, we have eyes, we have hair, and a hair might not understand an eyeball. And an eyeball might not understand a hair, but that doesn't mean that the eye is wrong or the hair is the wrong thing. It's both an essential part. So that goes back to the judgment, to really see that we're in this together. We're in this universal energy together. And the only way we can really advance as a, you know, species is if we start thinking with our hearts, because in our hearts we can see the oneness of it all. So as long as we think anything in duality, and when we go out into, you know, the spiritual realm, it doesn't, or the astral levels, it doesn't necessarily change. As long as there's good and evil, right and wrong, we're in duality. And it'll always be that, you know, cowboy and Indian scenario. But when we go into our hearts and we follow our hearts into that oneness that we're all the same, then that falls away. And that, you know, in essence then is enlightenment or nirvana. It can only happen that way. We can't get there through the mind.
Yeah, that's very important, very important. I want to bring this back to a little bit about failure, and there was another excellent quote, so I have, you know, two questions about that. And I think a lot of people being fearful of failure is the idea that they can have security in certain things, so they don't want to take risks. And you had a great quote. It says, when people come to you and say that they want security, you recommend they move into the highest security prison they can find. And I thought that was very, very well put. And I want you to just talk about that for a second.
Well, security is an illusion. We can, I mean, we can try to figure things out, but we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, yeah, I live in California. We can have an earthquake at any moment, and no idea of security will help that. All these man-made structures, you know, you can lose your job. We know from the depression that the stock market can crash, and, you know, natural disasters. There's so many things that we don't have any control over. But we want that. We want security. We want to know that we're okay. And we build all these things to make sure we're okay. And in the end, you know, on our deathbed, we know we're not. That didn't help us. It didn't save us from losing our structure. So it's an illusion. Security is an illusion. And that doesn't mean that you know, you should give up everything that holds you secure now or that you think holds you secure. Those are just little tools in life that are useful and maybe protect you from some of the things that are going on. But if you really, if you don't see them as tools but as a security, then you might be in for a surprise.
Mm-hmm. And you feel that's a big reason why people don't step out and try to do new things and, you know, be scared of the failure component of that?
Well, the failure component, yeah. I mean, well, it has never stopped me, I can't say, but it maybe held me back a little bit at times. If you're afraid of failure, you can't move. You will never try anything. And as a human being, you might have the idea of how things work, or if you stay at a job long enough, you will get a pension. Well, people are finding out now that that doesn't happen necessarily. That
yeah.
might have been an idea 40 years ago, but it is no longer an idea, and it's a very rude awakening if they've put their faith on that. So don't put your faith on it. That does, you can still put in your retirement fund, but as a tool that maybe you'll be able to use and maybe not, but don't give it your belief system.
Right, right.
And also if you think, well, I need to get this job and then go there and then go do this and then go do this and that'll get me there, that all is all the ideas that you have that are ego ideas come from the past. Our ideas are created from something that we know, that we have experienced before in the past or read about or heard about or something. It's all stuff from the past.
Mm-hmm.
So we're recreating our past. And if we don't go into the forward thinking, into the new, then nothing new can happen. And we don't know how wonderful things can be because
mm-hmm.
it hasn't been part of our experience. It could be much more blissful, for example, and it may be much more painful, too. But be aware of recreating the past, and that's what you do with your thinking mind. You always recreate the past, and you're not open to the new.
Right, right.
So people that create new things like Steve Jobs or so, they look into the new, Albert Einstein. They think with the front of the brain, what's ahead of me? What new thing can show up?
Yeah, absolutely,
actually,
absolutely.
Yeah, I worked on a series called The Astronomers on PBS a long time ago, and one of the astronomers that we were interviewing and filming, and he said, well, I look at the dark space out there, and when you look at the dark long enough, you see that the dark is taking shape because the light will infringe of it in a certain way, and it will move the dark space. That is, he was actually looking at what new thing appears out of the nothing,
mm-hmm.
and that's discovery, and it's the same with our lives. Say, okay, I'm building the structure out of what I know, but let me leave room for, you know, some people might say, let me leave room for the divine to act and show me a new possibility, or my intuition, or, you know, my guides, whatever you want to use, doesn't matter, but leave room for something that's not attached to your ego.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. So definitely leave yourself open for opportunities to expand on what you already know, for sure.
Yeah, because what you already know is very limited. And, you know, we see history repeating itself all the time because we look for solutions in the repeat.
Yes. Yeah, definitely squashes creativity.
And then
absolutely.
You train yourself. You go with the little impulses, even if they're crazy. And even
yeah.
if you stumble and you fall, you just get up again.
Definitely. I'm glad that you just mentioned that, because I thought one of the coolest stories in your book was about your first workshop and how you almost became a phone sex operator instead of a spiritual guide.
Well, you know, at least that story still makes everybody laugh. But things do happen, and we don't know what the purpose of it is.
Mm-hmm. It worked out. Everything worked out.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't until, you know, a couple of weeks after that I discovered it was actually, you know, very beneficial in terms of marketing.
Hey, sex sells, you know?
Yeah.
So, share that briefly with the audience, because, like I said, I think a lot of people could appreciate that and absolutely look at, you know, maybe something that they're going through right now, you know, as something that they might reap benefits from later on without them knowing.
Well, I was teaching a workshop, and I was going to teach a workshop in San Francisco, and I had flyers and advertised and mailing list, and somebody else was organizing it for me, and I used that person's phone number too, and but there was no response to it, none. And I said, okay. It just so happened that I had friends and I was invited to the opera, which was really nice. And I enjoyed my weekend in San Francisco. And when I came home, I wanted to thank my friend and promoter and dialed the number. And it was the XXX Erotic Bunny Farm that wanted the credit card immediately. And I called again and again, and then the horror of it set in, of having my face and my flyer on, I think it was an intuition workshop with the sex number.
No.
And I was instantly mortified, and I thought I was never going to set foot in San Francisco again. And then, you know, I called some friends to, well, get sympathy, but I didn't get any. They were just laughing. They thought it was the greatest joke ever. And eventually I thought, okay, this is pretty funny.
Yeah.
So there was just one digit off in the phone number on the flyer. So, but I wanted to expand my group of people that I knew to San Francisco, and I met more people through the story in San Francisco than I would have in teaching the workshop.
Absolutely. So it all worked out in the end.
And the universe usually has a sense of humor. There's always, you know, when you get so sure and full of yourself and think you're on the right path, there's usually something that happens to question that and say, hey, I'm still here. Look at this.
Yep, knock you down a notch.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a very, very good story. So, you know what, I just want to give you an opportunity, Joanna, to just give the audience information about how they can get this book, any of, you know, obviously your website, any social media platforms that you may have, just so that they can get in touch with you and reach out to you and find out more information about what you do.
Okay, well, the book is called The Transformation Promise, and it's available on Amazon. And I also have a Facebook page, The Transformation Promise. And then my personal website is quantumheartfield.com. That's quantum as in physics, heart as in the thing beating in your chest, and field as in baseballfield.com. So, and there's contact information on there. And also, if anybody from your show mentions that they come from your show, I will send them the first three chapters of the book as my gift.
Oh, excellent.
And I do, I mean, besides writing, see clients privately on the phone only. So I only work on the phone, also on physical healing and healing the body. And that information is also on the website. Yeah, that's
great. Great.
And it's also on your website, I think.
Yep, it's coming up. As soon as this show is over, I'm going to write a little blog about our show and share some of the things that I've learned reading your book. I really enjoyed the book. I definitely got a lot out of it. So I definitely hope that the audience jumps on this opportunity to get the first three chapters, because after they read the first three, they're definitely going to buy that book.
Well, thank you. I'm glad it's useful, because that's what it was meant to be, useful.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and if you have any parting words for the audience, I mean, go for it.
Well, my parting words would be stay out of judgment and keep your sense of humor open and stay in your heart. That, I think, is the most important thing. Look with your heart and see how you can be the best person you can be in any moment.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that.
Well, it's been wonderful being on your show.
Likewise. It was wonderful having you as a guest, and I thank you so much for giving us an opportunity to get to know you and your work a little better. And I definitely hope to hear from you soon, and I wish you all the best of luck as, you know, you spread this important message forward.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me on the show. Really, it's been my pleasure.
Likewise, likewise. Have a good night.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to The Transformation Promise with Johanna Drbowalski. Very good book, definitely worth the read, and very deep. A lot of stuff about metaphysics, and just really what I got out of it, most importantly, is that we are all one. We're all supposed to be loving to each other, just relate to each other on a better level. And, you know, this is something that the world needs now. And, you know, definitely appreciate Johanna spreading her message and, you know, just really, really getting most people enlightened about healing and being one being, serving one purpose. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. I'm your host, Omar Cumberbatch, and I want to wish everyone a good night.